Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Thank you, Pete. Good morning to the rest of you. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. This show comes your way every day from 10 to 2. Tom's honeymoon continues. Hopefully he and the wife, funny to say wife, right?
That's right. It's tough to get used to, but you do. It
having
only took
fun
me 9, 10 years.
Vegas. Sean is in with Dar on the production today. Always appreciate them. Couple of things to tell you about before we get into Zion Williamson not coming to Washington.
It's just not happening.
Zion Williamson Day was supposed to be today.
The times he'll come to Washington once a year to play, or if they somehow win a championship and then they decide to visit the White House. That's when he'll come to Washington. Ain't happening.
If we were on in New Orleans, eating at Brennan's, hanging out with our buddy Christian, maybe it would be Zion Williamson Day.
It would be a celebration, but it is not, because we do not.
We've got a chance for you to win $1,000 in an hour at 11 and at 12 and at 1 o'clock in our top of the hour update. So make sure you're listening for the keyword for cash. We've also got a chance for you to win tickets to see the Nats play the Cubs. Marquee matchup at Nationals Park coming up this week. You got to be listening at 12:55 today to win those tickets. So we talked a lot yesterday about the chances of the Wizards getting Zion Williamson. They had a 9% chance to do so. What's pretty amazing about last night is that the team that actually did get Zion Williamson, the New Orleans Pelicans, had a worse chance than Washington. I mean, you and I were kind of dismissive in saying, 9% chance, there's no reason to get excited, that's not going to happen. Well, a team with a 6% chance to get him, with the 7th best odds, and they only had the 7th best odds to do so, because before they won the draft lottery last night, they actually won a ping pong ball bounce a couple weeks ago that gave them slightly better odds than other teams that finished
with
the same record.
Very good point by you.
So everything's coming up Pelicans right now. Meanwhile, the Grizzlies and the Lakers both got much better picks than anticipated as well. The Grizzlies will pick 2nd, the Lakers 4th, despite finishing with the 11th best chances and being slotted at number 11. Last night was crazy, and if you're a Wizards fan, it was almost comical how poorly it went.
If you
don't care, then it was funny. If you care, then it was just maddening and heartbreaking.
I need everyone to understand, there was a 96% chance that that wouldn't happen. That's not me just saying a word and numbers. The odds, 96% chance that what occurred would not occur. Casually happened. Afterthought. They already moved on. And the Wizards go 9th. That means the Lakers. Blah! Just a devastating death blow to a franchise that needed something good to happen. Gone. Hope gone. Eradicated. Dead. Shot in the foot. Destroyed. Everything sucks. And it was like that. It was in an instant. And they'd already moved on to the story. And everyone's over Zioning. And they're talking about the next team that moved up. Well, that means Atlanta. Blah, blah, blah. That means Minnesota.
What are they supposed to do? Stop and feel bad for the Wizards on a national broadcast?
No, I'm not asking anyone to do anything different. Although we will talk about the broadcast. All I'm saying is it was that quick. It was that instantaneous where the stupid logo that I hate so much, they should be the Bullets, pops up and they show it. And it's already on to the next thing. It's that fast. That devastating, terrible moment that occurred last night for a franchise, as I said, that is in desperate need of something good to happen. Now, the 9th pick in the draft has had some success. It's also had some failures, more failure recently than success. But that it was so underwhelming. It was just so, of course, it went that way. Terrible night in D.C. sports last night. Terrible.
Look, they're picking in the top 10 in a draft where everyone said you need to have one of the top 3 picks. They say that every year, and there are players that get drafted outside of the top 3 most years that end up helping you. You could go back to Tracy McGrady in 97 or Sean Marion 2 years after that.
Dirk Nowitzki.
Amari Stoudemire 3 years after that, or DeMar DeRozan in 09 or Gordon Hayward in 2010, Kemba Walker in 2011, Andre Drummond in 2012, Frank Kaminsky in 2015. That is a pick where there have been plenty of good NBA players chosen. And whoever the next GM is, inevitably is going to have a better draft history, obviously, than Ernie Grunfeld. They're going to have to find players without getting Wall at number one or Beal at number three, something Grunfeld couldn't do. If they can't, then that's its own problem. That's its own issue to deal with. But it was a really discouraging night for Wizards fans because you thought, worst case scenario, they're going to be in that 6-7 range.
There was a 57% chance that that was going to happen, 6-7 or 8. And that's what I thought was most likely.
If last night plays out 100 times, they get the ninth pick four times.
Yeah.
4% chance they pick as low as ninth. 4%.
There was a slightly under 40% chance they jumped into the top four. I never had illusions of Zion. What I did have illusions of was RJ Barrett.
Yeah.
Three. I had illusions of somehow somebody not needing Ja Morant, then he gets to three. Something like that where you had a true no-brainer difference maker.
You know, now, my hunch happen, was, I don't know if it was a hunch or a kind of a hope, but the thing that I kept coming back to was 18% to be in the top two. They get the second pick and they take Morant. And I was going to be, frankly, more excited even. Because I think he's going to be a superstar. I think he is incredible. He's what the NBA is all about. Nope. We were watching last night and Allison's sitting across from me and she's going, so they got the ninth pick?
Yeah.
I thought you said they were going to get like the sixth pick. I mean, she meant nothing by it, but she just kept going. She said the word ninth 10 times. Ninth? They're ninth? And I just kept saying, yes, they're ninth.
Yes, they're ninth.
They're the ninth pick?
Yes.
She was like stressing the nine. But they're ninth.
Yeah. Nine
times. I promise.
Times.
They're ninth. Yes. There it is.
It shouldn't have happened, but it did.
I mean, it was extremely Wizards. It was the most Wizardsy thing. I was texting with somebody with the organization yesterday. And I was like, hey, happy Zion Day. They're like, we can't really bank on that. We're probably not getting Zion. I said, just dare to dream a little bit. Next thing you know, you're picking eight spots after he goes.
Well, then Ben Golliver, who had this story, the in-depth of actually how it goes. So there are number combinations assigned to each team. It's like a bingo board, right? You just get a series of number combinations, and you've got a printout. Teams with 14% had multiple pages of a printout with all their number combos. So when the first ping pong ball comes up, everyone that's got a seven is looking down. Who has a seven? Oh, I got a seven. The number four comes up. Oh, I got a four. That's awesome. Oh, I got a 12. Oh, my God. You know who was there? The Pelicans, and the Wizards.
Right.
The Wizards had multiple combinations to move up to the number one pick. They had the second most of that, whatever that last ping pong ball was that got drawn. They had the second most combinations behind the Pelicans. Not only did they not get number one, which again, I can live with. Not everyone gets to get number one. Only one team does. But somehow, instead of you're one number away from one, you're now ninth. And just kicked in the giblets, just hit with a spiked bat in the way of us.
And let me kind of clarify that, too. I think you explained it well, but just to kind of double down on that. In other words, there was a moment last night in the room before the actual draft lottery, because one person from every organization is in basically a quarantine room that no one else is allowed in. Your phones aren't allowed in.
Yes.
And they're all sitting there finding out 10 minutes before the lottery who gets the top pick. And then someone from, I think it's like PricewaterhouseCoopers or whatever.
Ernst & Young, yes.
Carries the envelopes out, right? When it was down to two teams where they were about to find out who had the number one overall pick, mm-hmm. It was either the Pelicans or the Wizards. Understand that. It was the Pelicans or the Wizards that were about to find out
before
that they had the number one overall pick.
Before the process begins, it's irrational to believe that it was going to happen to you.
Correct.
But this is why, for so many years, non-Caps winning the Cup division, this is what always made DC sports so galling. It's that very realistic and appropriate opportunity to hope. Regardless of what the on-paper design was, we're now in a position where it is reasonable to believe that something good could happen. Three numbers broke the only way that they could have for the Wizards to be in a position to have the lightning strike of good fortune hit their dumb heads.
It was Tommy Shepard, who's the acting general manager and team president, in the room, and he's thinking, oh my goodness, I'm about to know something that is going to send all of Washington, D.C. into the biggest frenzy for basketball it's been in decades. And then he found out, nope, it's the Pelicans. And actually, we pick ninth.
And it wasn't even consolation prize. Oh, you get the 2 pick. We'll get an outstanding John Morant. Or, oh, you get 3. We'll get R.J. Barrett, who's a left-handed Scottie Pippen in waiting. No. It's Jackson Hayes or some dude that no one has ever seen play outside of a YouTube clip.
What was your reaction when you saw that envelope open and that Wizards logo at number 9? 800-636-1067 is the number on the Hadid Carpet Cleaning listener lines. Next, I want to get into the coverage of the event. I think the broadcast, the presentation, the production put into it, the hosts, they're all very good. It was big leagues. It's ESPN. It's a thing they do well. The players being in the same room as they're talking about them and the way that they talked about Zion Williamson while he was sitting there, I found utterly cringeworthy last night. I want to know if anybody agrees with me. 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. Bottom of the hour at 10:30. I got to break up with the Washington National. It's over. I will never again at any point have any feelings of positivity toward this person. I want to know which National you're breaking up with as they continue to rip your heart out. We'll do that on Grant and Danny on The Fan.
A lot of good stuff happens in the dark. Concerts, parties. But you can almost never get good pictures because, well, dark. Unless you've got the Pixel 3a from Google. A smartphone known for taking great photos. It's got a great feature called Night Sight that gets shots with great detail and color, even in super low light. So you can get beautiful photos of your favorite moments. Not to mention, the Pixel 3a has an amazing battery. This thing gets a 7-hour charge in 15 minutes. So your phone stays charged all day. The adaptive battery even knows to limit battery use for apps you don't use as much. So head to a Verizon store to get the Google Pixel 3a starting at $399. That is a seriously decent price for a seriously premium phone. Approximate battery life based on a mix of talk, data, standby, mobile, hotspot, and use of other features with always-on display off. An active display or data usage will decrease battery life. Charging rates are based on the use of the included charger. Charging time performance statistics are approximate. Actual results may vary.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Number one pick in the 2019 NBA draft goes to the New Orleans Pelicans.
Congratulations, New Orleans. You pick first. Memphis is second. Stop me when you hear the Wizards. The Knicks pick third. The Lakers fourth. The Cavs fifth. The Suns sixth. The Bulls seventh. The Hawks 8th, the Wizards 9th.
There, I hit the stupid buzzer. Ugh.
Last night was not fun for Wizards fans. 800-636-1067 is the number. By the way, just looking up all the mock drafts today, all kinds of different names going to Washington at 9 based on what happens in front of them.
A lot of variants because so many picks are ahead of you, so it's hard to know.
The most recent one I just found, Bol Bol. From Oregon, the 7'2" big man who can shoot the 3, 21 points, 10 boards, 3 blocks in like a dozen games at Oregon.
9 games as a freshman before stress injuries. If there's one thing the Wizards need, it's a guy that can't stay on the court.
13 of 25 from distance at 7'2" this past year. His arms, which are the longest I've ever seen. He's got over a 7-foot wingspan. However, they literally are the width of like a number 2 pencil. I mean, he is so small. He's 7'2", so there's not a lot of meat you can put on that bone as a teenager.
Yeah.
But that's the guy that I just saw in my most recent mock draft I looked up for the Wizards. He is not Zion Williamson. He is not Ja Morant.
He's distinctly not those guys.
The 9th pick has been successful for teams over the years, but you got to pick the right guy, something the Wizards have struggled with outside of the top 5, albeit they'll have a new front office now.
Recently, it's a lot of Jacob Poeltl and Frank Kaminsky and Noah Vonleh and Trey Burke. That doesn't inspire a lot of confidence, does it?
See, in the same way that I'm going to dismiss those guys were the recent picks, I also dismiss the list I went through and say, oh, Amari Stoudemire went there. None of that matters. Every draft is different. Sometimes totally there aren't 9 great players in a draft. Sometimes there are 22 excellent players in a draft. And also, can your front office find the guy? Do they evaluate properly? If Ernie Grunfeld was making this pick, I would assume that last night was a terrible thing because they absolutely can't find a player at number nine.
Would like to trade the pick for a veteran player.
I don't know who their GM is going to be this time in a month. I don't know who's going to make that pick on June 20th. Let's go to Tom in Manassas on G&D. What's up, buddy?
What's up, Tom?
Hey, guys. I love the show. Yeah, of course, this happened. There's such a D.C. sports thing here, so it kind of... I guess the one hope is that Ernie's not there and we do get a front office that can make a good pick and find the diamond in the rough, but the Wizards are going to be in the toilet. The Nats are in the toilet. The Redskins are pretty much in the toilet, and the OV era is coming to an end, so that's cool. That's where I'm at.
So that's cool. Yeah. Then I'm still on Caps parade. It's less than a year since the parade happened, so I don't have any venom, but man, oh man, is it dark right now. It just is.
Yeah.
The Nationals, when the Caps won the Stanley Cup, the Nats, I believe, were 12 games over 500 and in first place at that point in June. That's before they lost 18 of 24 and haven't recovered since. I think they're almost 25 games under 500 since then.
It feels right.
Yeah.
And every time they play, I feel like I'm waiting for something bad to happen at this point. I saw last night after they got the ninth pick, everybody doing the woe is us DC sports thing. It's been a bad several months, clearly. I'm just not playing that game. The Caps won the Stanley Cup last year.
They did.
Last summer.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a parade. It was incredible.
It was a lot of fun.
We cashed number one ratings bonuses, riding the Caps all the way. Eric Bickle has a ring.
It's a big ring.
A Stanley Cup ring.
It's a huge ring.
A championship ring. Eric Bickle has one.
Eric Bickle has it, you guys.
So I'm not going to, like, woe is us. We never get anything good. Well, how about the Stanley Cup a few months ago?
Now, it doesn't keep Eric Bickle warm. He's still very cold.
True.
That doesn't help with his body warmth. I wish it was a heated ring so he would feel comfortable.
Speaking of the Nats, we'll get into the National you are breaking up with. Could be a coach, could be a player, whoever you want to break up with. A little bit of a situation where we can vent after another important divisional loss against a stumbling NL East team you needed to beat last night at home, where the Nationals are 5 games under .500.
Yuck.
This year, they're 9 games under .500 at 16-25 overall. We'll get into that at 10:30. But real quick on the coverage of last night. Were you cringing at all like I was? They trot these players out. By the way, they only needed Zion Williamson there. They didn't talk about or acknowledge anybody else the entire time. Poor Ja Morant, what are you even doing there? That was in and of itself weird. They acted like it was just Zion and they had like 10 dudes sitting around him. But on top of that, for those of you that didn't watch, I haven't seen anything like this in other broadcasts. They've got these guys sitting 10 feet from the set watching the TV in front of them, this telecast of Jay Billis and Jay Williams and their analysts talking about how they walk on water.
Yeah.
And then they just keep showing them on a split screen. So they got Billis saying, this guy's never missed a shot. This guy's never made a bad pass. This guy's the best thing that ever happened to basketball.
His explosive athleticism is this, is this. And you're like, they're all sitting right there.
It seemed like, honestly, if you remember He Got Game.
Yeah.
When like there's like a montage where everyone's talking about Jesus Shuttlesworth as the greatest player ever. Mm-hmm. And like he and his sister are sitting there watching it. You know what I'm talking
about? Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's what was happening. It was like there's never been a basketball player before Zion Williamson. He's a can't-miss guy, 0% chance he busts, and all these things. But they're like split-screening. Bill is saying all this with Zion, who's just blushing and as red as that Nats towel next to you. It was the weirdest thing ever. And over again, they kept doing this. Like Rachel Nichols would be like, Zion, we're about to find out where you're going. And they'd show him, Zion, how do you like New Orleans this time of year?
Weird, man.
It was so uncomfortable.
So I don't know when they started doing this exactly, but it's the new thing. It's another chance for, you know, agents and players are fine with it because it's like you're on TV. It's a chance to get your spotlight to maybe a slightly different audience and increase the brand and whatever. It is really weird how it's done. I almost wish that they weren't, that broadcast was just for us. And they weren't broadcasting what these guys were saying in the big room at the same time, if that makes sense. So while they're going, this is what's great about Zion Williamson. Well, what if it's a year where there's no great number one pick and everybody's getting picked apart? Is that more appropriate?
The whole thing is just very strange. Stuff going on in the room. Like at the NFL draft, okay, there are TVs on. And I don't know if there's audio blaring over the whole thing or not. But like they're sitting in a room. Their family's around them. There's a lot going on. They're not watching and listening to every word right before this draft. This is a silent room. It is library quiet. It looks like the room for the Heisman Trophy announcement, basically. But I also don't understand, why are the players there? You said why an agent would want him to be there. I get why Zion Williamson would want national TV time.
I get it.
I get why he'd want to be interviewed three times and told how great he is. From a network standpoint, that's uncomfortable and awkward. Why on earth are they there? It just seems unnecessary.
Especially the guys that aren't getting talked about, even though they're great, right? So I guess if you're John Morant, you want people to see you because you're sitting next to Zion Williamson.
I get why the players want to be there. Why does the network want them there?
But what I'm saying is, if I'm a player, it's gonna be so awkward. You should have some control of that, like, you know, understanding that I'm gonna walk into this really awkward situation where they're either gonna talk about me or they're not, and it could be positive, could be negative. But the whole thing is very strange. I guess I get the benefit of trotting them out there like that. But if I'm a player, I'm going, that's a little uncomfortable for me.
I felt like I was doing crunches the entire time I was watching. It was that cringeworthy. It was strange. And that isn't to say it was a bad broadcast. They do big NBA things on ESPN pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I just, that decision, having those guys there, and then the split screens.
Just uncomfortable.
The number of times they definitively said, and there is number one pick, Zion Williamson.
Are we embarrassing you? He's like shaking his head, yes. You know, like,
settle down. Yeah. I mean, stop falling all over yourselves for this. It was uncomfortable. Next, the national last night that I had reaffirmed I'm breaking up with. It's over. No matter what this guy does, he's yours, Danny. He's not mine.
You get out.
I'm not claiming him. He could hit a walk-off home run the next 4 days, and I'll say, good for him and for Danny. That's Danny's guy. He's not my guy. We'll see which national you want to break up with next. They're 16-25. We're Grant and Danny.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Ellickson into the wind. The kick and the 1-0 to Ramos, swung on and hit in the air to deep left. Back goes Soto, way back. This ball is gone. Goodbye. That is a grand slam home run for the Buffalo, Wilson Ramos. And the Nationals have surrendered a slam for the second straight game. And really, for the second straight inning, they've been in the field. Wilson Ramos' fourth career grand slam is his second home run this year. RBIs 20, 21, 22, and 23. And not turning the double play to end the inning has crushed the Nationals here in the top of the first inning.
Charlie Slows is heard on 106.7 The Fan last night. And just like that, you're not even an inning into the game. You haven't even taken the field yet offensively to get any swings, any at-bats, and you've already lost, basically, with a team right now undermanned and injured in its lineup that's hitting sub-200 in May. G&D, ready to ask you what national you are done with. Who are you over? Who are you breaking up with on the Nationals? 800-636-1067 is the number. My answer is very simple. A guy who, yet again, made a play look harder than it is, and because of a miscue, led to those four runs in that grand slam earlier in that inning.
Right-hander sets. Check of the runner. Slide step of the pitch. Breaking ball. Hit on the ground. Right side. Could be two. The flip to second. Defoe the relay to first. And sprawling to hold it is Parra, trying to keep his foot in the bag. Although Cano is saying that he didn't think he did. And the Mets may look to challenge this play.
I'll jump in now. And I'll tell you what happened. The Mets challenged the play. The Mets won the challenge. Wilmer Defoe did not turn a double play that he needed to turn. Wilmer Defoe is a terrible base runner. Wilmer Defoe is a pretty good defensive player who makes one too many miscues, errors, plays like that, which isn't an error, for a guy who, by all accounts, is a pretty solid defender. Mike Rizzo said he's very good at shortstop and second on the junkies today, and I think analytically speaking, that's probably correct. But routine plays routinely are botched by Wilmer Defoe.
Every once in a while, it's a little too cavalier. And that was one of those examples.
Correct.
Where it's great if you're a 10-year veteran. If you're Omar Vizquel and you Cadillac a throw, you could do that because you're great. You ain't great. You don't have time to lose focus.
I think he carries himself like he's a stud. and you need to be happy to be here. And that gets on my nerves as well. He is a 241 hitter right now. He hit 230 last year. For his career, he doesn't hit 250. He doesn't have power. He hit some long home runs occasionally for a little guy. But we're talking about someone who's hit 15 home runs in over 1,000 career plate appearances. So you don't hit for power. You don't hit for average. You're terrible on the base paths. You commit silly, ridiculous mistakes all the time. And you botch things like you did last night defensively. The one reason you're in the lineup right now, other than injuries and
necessity,
and force. Basically, you are a jag who is a bench player who's being pressed into duty. That's not your fault, okay? I'm not faulting you for playing more than you should. But you need to make every routine play defensively that is possible. You need to field every ball cleanly that comes to you and make every throw to get a double play that you should, because you're not providing anything else. You don't provide anything else. I am so over Wilmer Defoe. I'm done with Wilmer Defoe. I can't wait till Trey Turner comes back so I see less of Wilmer Defoe, and Carter Kieboom comes back up to play his traditional position now, which moving forward will be second base, and then Dozier maybe is coming off the bench or not. I want to see so much less of Wilmer Defoe. Bad baseball IQ, guys, Danny, I have no patience for it. Drives me nuts. At least Victor Robles is leading the team in home runs. At least he is sterling defensively. At least he's providing offense. What is the redeeming quality with Wilmer Defoe right now? What is the trait that you go, hey, you know what? You get this at least. Help me out here. Tag, you're it.
I don't have it. And that's obviously be the leader here in the who you're over. There are other nominees, certainly, that you could have. I wish I had gone more strongly a couple years ago after the season Michael A. Taylor had, where he hit 270 with just under 20 homers and just under 20 steals in basically two-thirds of the season. The 162 pace was 25 homers, 23 steals, and a 270 hitter playing great center field. And in my mind, I'm going, maybe this is now unlocked. Maybe this is the new normal. And I said, hey, maybe they should consider trading him. I didn't go hard with it. So I'm not sitting here going, I said at the time they should have traded him. I floated it, but I should have beat the drum. It's hard to watch at this point. It's not okay. The no power, strikeout machine, in his own head, every single inch that the bat moves is now this mechanical labor where he's thinking about everything that's ever happened to him bad, and it's all being manifested out at the plate. So every time he swings the bat, it's hand position here, move this fingernail here, change this bat angle, do the, oh my God, it's already past me. He looks so uncomfortable, so awful, so out of place. It's like someone that's never played before who won a contest wandering onto the field and being allowed to take it a bat. When Garth Brooks got to take at bats for the Mets in spring training for some reason, that's what it looked like. A person that is so uncomfortable and so in their own head that you need to just send them somewhere else for their own mental health. It's tragic. It's sad. It's awful. It's a train wreck. There's just bitter, utter hopelessness. And he's the nicest guy of all time.
Oh, he's so nice.
He's the kindest, sweetest, most gentle young man. I want success for him so badly.
If he was listening right now, he'd say, Mr. Rouye.
Why would you say that about him?
Why,
you know,
Mr.
Rouye?
The nerve of you. I'm doing my best, sir.
This is where it's hard. I'm not digging ditches here, okay? I'm not breaking rocks or anything else. This is where this job is hard, because that is a nice man. He is a sweetheart.
Yeah.
I want success for him so badly. I know if we're breaking up with people, this isn't good for me. It's not good for you. We've got to break up.
Same thing with Defoe. It's not personal by any means. There's nothing about him as a guy that is a problem. It's just, this is not a thing anymore. I can't keep watching this. This is where if I'm Grant Rizzo, I'm just throwing something in my suite and I'm going, we're losing a different way.
It's why I'd be a terrible GM, by the way. Because I would watch Brian Dozier hit 190 and I'd go, anybody else? Anybody else?
See,
I would get so pissed.
For me, I look for redeeming qualities. I wouldn't be a good GM by any means. Maybe I'd be a better GM than you.
You'd be better than me.
Because you're getting rid of Dozier, and that makes no sense at this point with your injury situation. But we're talking about years of this Michael Taylor fiasco.
Yes.
Years of Wilmer Defoe. And at least Taylor. Again, I'm asking you, what's the Wilmer Defoe plus? What's the attribute? Maybe you could say he could play third, short, and second. None of them particularly well this year. But he could
stand there.
Right, he could stand at three positions. Michael Taylor is a sterling defensive player.
This is true.
There is a place for him on 27 major league teams right now. You put him in the 7th, 8th, 9th inning. When he's right, he could give you power off the bench. Right now, he has zero home runs, and to my knowledge, I believe, still has zero runs batted in this year.
That is a zero in that column, yes.
Think about that. We are 40 games in. Now, granted, he only has 43 at-bats, but he's 7 for 43. He's striking out 53% of the time. I'm done with him offensively, but he could still help this ball club in other ways. I don't know how Wilmer Defoe helps the team. Seriously, when you think of guys making mistakes on the bases over the last 2 years, now Victor Robles, based on recency, is probably number one.
He's got his own division now, Robles.
The next guy is Defoe.
Yeah.
When you think of annoying defensive plays that needed to be made, he's high on that list. And oh, by the way, you live with that if he hits 310. You live with that if he's going to hit 26 homers but has a frying pan for a glove. He hits no homers. He hits 240. What are we doing here? And again, he's playing right now more because of their injury situation. I understand that. But my point is, I'd rather find just another guy who plays three positions in the offseason so I don't have to see him anymore. Yeah. I'm breaking up with him.
And I get it. He's cheap. He's arbitration and all this stuff. I know. I understand what we're doing. This is like being... We're not saying this is a rational conversation either. Everyone's frustrated. They're 10 under 500, basically. A million games back of the Phillies. Everything sucks right now. They're playing terrible baseball. They just finished a stretch where they gave up more grand slams than they had hits over 15 innings. No one's saying this is a good, healthy sports radio conversation. A little bit cathartic. It's a borderline vent clock, if I can say that.
Yeah, it's essentially the vent clock. I mean, honestly, some guy tweeted me and goes, imagine watching this team and thinking Wilmer Defoe's the biggest problem.
No. No one's saying that.
He's not the biggest problem, jackass. But this is what I'm going to talk about right now. And unfollow me, idiot. Immediately. Immediately unfollow me if you tweeted me that. 800-636-1067. 800-636-1067.
You could save him the trouble and block his ass.
Defoe. I should. You know what? I'll go find him and I'll block him.
Good. Out of anger. Let's do it. Let's block people out of anger today.
Wilmer Defoe doesn't make a play in the first inning. We need to play cleaner baseball. We need to make all the plays that are routine. Again, first inning, he didn't do it.
Offensive efficiency.
By the way, Jeremy Hellickson's on the mound. He's not any good. Please help him out. Pitch to contact all day long. Can't get a strikeout of his life dependent on it. We know who he is. We know what he is. We know what he's not. He's not your father. He's the 44th patient. Field the baseball. Throw the baseball. That guy at first isn't a first baseman, Gerardo Parra. He's just playing there because everyone's hurt.
There.
Please throw the baseball. You're playing the position you're supposed to. I need you to do your job because the first baseman is doing someone else's. And the pitcher is pretending like he should be here. This wasn't about you, Jeremy Hellickson. I apologize.
But he got some shrapnel.
800-636-1067. You get to break up with the National. They're 9 games under .500. Maybe it'll make you feel a little better before tonight's game. We're Grant and Danny. Do it next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What National are you good on? I'm over Wilmer Defoe. Danny's done with Michael Taylor.
And I feel guilty about it because I love the dude.
I feel guilty about the whole topic. But
here we are.
McNatt should feel guilty about the number of hours I've spent watching so far, and they're 16 and 25.
Yeah.
800-636-1067, 800-636-1067 on the Hadid carpet cleaning listener lines. Look, I get it. They're on their fourth first baseman. They're injured beyond repair. No one's saying that they should be 25 and 16. But time and time again, when Defoe gets chances to do his job, he doesn't. And in your case, you're tired of the three-pitch at-bats and the three-pitch strikeouts for Michael Taylor. And I understand. Let's go to Bill in North Carolina on Grant and Danny.
Bill,
who are you breaking up with today?
Fellas, I'm looking at Jeffrey Rodriguez and Brian Goodwin and Dane Dunning and Kelly and Robbie Ray and Lucas Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez and Trinan, and I could go on and holding on to Michael A. Taylor. And I'm going to break up with the George Allen of baseball, the guy who can build a team but apparently can't hold one together, one Michael Rizzo.
Really? You're breaking up with the architect of the roster.
I don't think he can survive this, fellas. I think at the end of the year when the contract is up, I think this team's going to take a real long look, and I think we might have a new manager, and I don't like blaming these things on management. I'm not going to jump on that bandwagon, but I would take Bud Black over Martinez. But
well, you and every other person on
yeah,
the
you
planet.
And us both. And
thank you for the phone call. Appreciate you. So, a couple of things. Rizzo's off season, and he's had many a banner off season. Right now, you'd have to say we're only a third of the way through the season, but it doesn't look good.
Corbin, great. That's on the
Corbin's
balance sheet.
Corbin's been masterful.
The other side, you know.
Brian Dozier.
Not particularly good.
Has not helped. I mean, Trevor Rosenthal, disaster. Kyle Bearclaw has not been good enough at all. He has the most misleading good statistics on the team, but can't strand base runners and gets bailed out by Sean Doolittle every time he pitches in the eighth inning. So you kind of go around the horn. Now, I will say the catching position, I think the Suzuki acquisition
is fair.
A win.
You're right. Yep.
Yan Gomes has been very solid. So you could say he kind of batted 500 with some of the moves that he made. I promise you, though, if you are one of the people advocating for getting rid of Mike Rizzo, you would regret that.
Too much good for me on the balance sheet.
And now, it's not even close. I mean, so much good, so little bad over the last several years, not to mention with Mike Rizzo would go an exceptional front office. Guys like Johnny DiPuglia and so many others that have helped groom and develop Juan Soto and Anthony Rendon and Trey Turner. And you'll get results out of Carter Kieboom that you're going to respect and revere at one point in the near future. And Victor Robles. I mean, it's short-sighted to look at this team right now or the bullpen or the rotation. And because and we don't know what the restrictions were, the money they were able to spend or not spend and say, they don't have a good roster. True. They're also very hurt. But even if they're hurt, you could say their bullpen's not good enough or their back rotation's not good enough. I'm telling you, you'd regret getting rid of Mike Rizzo.
I think, but then it's also the other side of that, is it? And he's said this morning on the Junks and last week as well. It's fair to criticize. It's fair to say, hey, these were mistakes. The same way trading for Papelbon was a mistake. The same way, you know, it may not look as good in retrospect, you know, grabbing Doug Fister and losing Robbie Ray, who's now a pretty solid bona fide starter. Some of these other prospects that the caller just mentioned. Now, I'd rather have Adam Eaton than a couple of those guys. Lucas Giolito's got a 7-game sample where he's now okay in Chicago. Maybe he gets back to who he was at one point, but I'd make each one of those trades in a vacuum. It's just now that things aren't going well for the Nats, he found those guys that he's able to have other teams want. He found Jesus Luzardo. He found Dane Dunning. He found Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez and Jeffrey Rodriguez and company. They're commodities that people want so you can improve the ball club. You got to give him credit for those too.
Yeah. Dane Dunning, by the way, is dealing with all kinds of arm problems and hadn't pitched this year. So I don't know why he got thrown onto that list by that caller.
He would fit right in here.
Let's go to Mike in Reston. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you?
Hey, buddy.
Great.
So I'm done with Davey Martinez, guys. Now, in spring training, weren't we promised that they were focusing on getting back to the basics and fundamentals and things of that sort?
That's what we were told.
I'm not saying.
That's what we were told. Yeah, you're on. Yeah.
Yep. I'm not saying that Davey is taking 100% of the blame, but I know that he's not the whole problem. But can we all agree that he's also not any part of the solution either?
It certainly looks that way. I mean, he hasn't had answers at this point. He has not made anything better. I am anti-firing managers in season unless you're replacing them with their long-term solution. In other words, if you're blowing out Davey Martinez in season, you're bringing in the guy that's the manager for the next 3 years, Girardi, Showalter, whoever that is. I don't believe in firing your manager to promote someone on a staff that I don't think is very good anyway, whether that be Chip Hale or Kevin Long. Who you promoting? You're not going to get better. You're paying this guy anyway. Theoretically, they're going to play better ball as they get healthier. You might as well give him the chance to prove himself. You rolled the dice on him originally. That all said, the rest of your call, I think, is true. We have enough sample, couple hundred games of basically sub-500 or so baseball now to say there's nothing elite about Davey Martinez. There's no way you could scream from a rooftop, this is the guy to get them to the World Series. You might have hopes that he's a decent manager ultimately, or you might be able to say, and I do all the time, this is not on Davey. I don't think there's a single manager in baseball that would have this team in first place, that would have this team with the inverse record 25-16. The bullpen is awful. The rotation is three deep. The lineup's hitting sub-200 in May because they don't have any healthy bodies, and they're finally getting healthier, but it now takes guys like Rendon and Soto time to get back to where they were. I don't care who you bring back, Dusty Baker or Manny Acta or who you hire. Nobody is getting this team to be that different than they have been this year. But that also doesn't necessarily mean that Davey Martinez is all that great.
Right. It's always so hard to gauge, right? Could a, for the sake of argument, could a, quote, better manager have stolen a couple games somewhere? So could they be 18-23? Could they be 19-22? Not as dire as it is. Because you're right. No one's going to be great right now with what they've just gone through.
If you think that another manager would have them at 19-22, it means mathematically you think that a manager's worth 9 wins over a season. That's a lot of wins.
Which is a lot. So that's what makes it so hard to evaluate, because you don't know.
Most executives in baseball would tell you managers are not worth 9 wins.
I agree. So what is it? What are we really talking about? Right? What does it really boil down to? Is it just a symbolic gesture to say this is not okay? Because I generally, with you, firing a manager in the middle of the season usually isn't the protocol that I would enact, unless you've got some genius waiting in the wings that you know you already kind of know. To me, though, if you believe that this team, as constructed, is good, and they're not playing well, you can't just let it go down the toilet bowl.
But this is the difference. This team right now is not good.
This group right here is not good.
And I get tweets every night, and we get calls all the time saying, how is this team 16-25? This team that you're watching is a 16-25 team. Wilmer Defoe is your starting shortstop, and Gerardo Parra signed off the scrap heap is your daily first baseman. And Michael Taylor getting 4 at-bats a night in center field. You kind of go around the horn over the last few weeks of different things they've been doing. Or Carter Kieboom up from the minors playing out of position where he wasn't ready defensively. That's a 16-25 team. Anibal Sanchez and Jeremy Hellickson with ERAs over 6. Though that's a 16-25 team. This is not 3 years ago's Nationals. I mean, people are pretending like it is. Now, maybe when you get healthy and you start mashing, or when Anibal Sanchez goes on a heater.
Cuts the ERA in half.
Yeah, that can be a different conversation. But this team right now, this is not Davey Martinez managing a 95-win team to 72 wins. I'm sorry, that's not what this is. J.P. Finley of NBC Sports Washington on the Redskins. We finally got positive news on Colt McCoy. We'll ask him about McCoy next right here on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.